Thank you. All right. It's a piece that comes from a book called The Second Novel, which, of course, is every writer's greatest failure. So I decided to just title the second novel, The Second Novel, The Trench Coat. The ultimate mark of the American writer as myth. Hemingway, of course, had one. Read the famous Lillian Ross account of Hemingway by some Burberry. As a writer in search of himself, I began with humbler sources, more in tune with my time, the 50s, J.D. Salinger, The Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield. I displayed my Holden Caulfield raincoat all through the late 50s. It was especially unique on campus. It was unphony. You turned the collar up, buried your hands in the pockets, and mumbled to other guys in their Holden Caulfield raincoats how depressing everything was. We had style. The girls loved us. We were existentially exciting. I wanted a working writer's trench coat once I went to Europe. I wanted an original Burberry, but I had to settle for less. I threw my ragged Holden Caulfield raincoat over backboard in a Greek ship crossing from Corfu to Italy. In Rome, I bought a very fashionable Italian raincoat, imitation trench coat, with a fancy belt, buckled sleeves, leather collar, cut to hang, and the latest style, just above the knee. God damn it, it was sharp. It immediately attracted a beautiful Italian streetwalker who followed me for block after block after block in the dark. And when I finally turned around with my vision of young American writer astride beautiful black-haired Italian woman in a brass bed overlooking the fountains, the Spanish steps, the flowers, the streets of Rome, she was gone. My Italian raincoat, which survived and still hangs a little dumbfounded in my Wisconsin closet, says Roma in bright letters on the inside label. It awaits death, burial, and resurrection in its native land. I must not try not to disappoint it. In 1967, upon the publication of a piece of journalism in the Sunday Supplement, I purchased finally the awe-inspiring original Burberry trench coat. It was more than a coat. It was a home. I crawled inside and inspected the blanket liner, the secret pockets, the enigmatic buttons, the special attachments to protect the soul of the writer from the inevitable confrontations of the natural world. I stood before the full-length mirror at Abercrombie and Fitch in Chicago and listened to muffled reverberations of Shakespeare. Here, by God, was a man. $150, the clerk said. Charge it. I was astounded to hear my own voice. I'll wear it home, said the... He'll wear me home, said the Burberry, as I found myself moving through Chicago streets bigger than machine. I was met with tactful silence at my front door. Weeks later, on the street, I detected laughter. Standing full force before my closet mirror one morning, I concluded I was no match for my Burberry. I was no Hemingway. I was no writer. I was nothing. How could I dare wear such laurels? I had not yet earned my Burberry, and consequently, it buried me. I was too short for the role. The belt, when drawn tightly around the waist with bravado, caused the bottom of the Burberry to flare up in such profusion that I swept the street like an upside-down bouquet. For at least a year, I let it hang in the closet, hoping to achieve some sort of compromise. But in the end, the men of Abercrombie and Fitch came on a silent afternoon mission to reclaim it. They wore original Burberrys with a half-moon collar floating above their heads. Flashlights and clandestine tools swung from the metal rings on the Burberry belts. The broad yoke across the back gapped at the proper intervals. Their wrists were cinctured in dramatic gestures. Here were men in step with their Burberrys. I passed them the bulging green box from under the stairs. Credit my account, I whispered. You know,
You guys would make great writers.
Not a Burberry, but a London Fog.